Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, September 5th. I'm Ray Graff. It's a beautiful day. It's a great day to talk gardening, and we have our gardening crew back today. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery lurks outside of Studio A right now. Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, and Delilah Riggs of the Berry Patch are all in Studio A. Give us a call, 800-348-2551 if you have a gardening question. 800-348-2551. Always a popular show. People always get a little miffed if they don't get through. I suggest you call now and get in the queue. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. We garden after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Gardening today, and the group is back together. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham. Greg Ward owns Ward's Nursery, and he runs it, a gardening destination in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. And Delilah Riggs, owner and operator of the Berry Patches here. It's a first-generation diversified farm in Steventown, New York. You got a gardening question? This is a good time. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number is 800-348-2551. If you didn't get that, I will say it approximately 400,000 times during the next hour. Hey, gang, how are we doing?
Hey. Great.
Lovely day out there.
Bob, great to see you back with us. We missed you last time.
I am all fixed up.
That's good.
I'm repaired.
The $6 million man.
Well, some truth to that, too.
Oh, really?
I have a little bionic in me here and there.
Hey, Greg Ward, what's happening over at Ward's Nursery?
Well, the weather is fantastic.
You know what? We'll turn your mic on, and it's even going to be better, what you just said.
Am I supposed to do that?
No.
There we go.
It's okay. Not a union shop, but you're not really supposed to touch the buttons.
Okay. Well, the weather is fantastic. Everything is sort of popping up again. So in other words, you planted all these things this spring and maybe the summer, and they got a little tired, got a little hot, and now they're all recovering, looking great. Mm. The only thing I would say is that if you've done all of that, is don't forget to water, because we have it now. Even though we had a lot of rain this year,
we haven't
had any rain for a month.
Yep,
it's been a month.
Drying out.
Yep, it's been drying out.
It's amazing.
Dry.
Yep.
I drove a truck over the lawn yesterday, and I didn't make any marks in the lawn at all.
Why'd you do that?
I'm not telling you.
You just drove the truck on the
I'm
lawn.
I'm not supposed to be doing these things.
Well, good thing there's only a few people listening, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Delilah Riggs, how are things going at the Berry Patch?
Great. It's watermelon season.
Oh.
Taste testing today.
Nice.
Great weather for watermelons.
Yes, absolutely wonderful. I was actually harvesting some melons before I came here.
Sweetens them right up when it gets cool.
It does. Warm days, cool nights. It is the absolute best for any type of fruit to get them nice and sweet.
Beautiful. Fred Breglia, the Landis Arboretum, it's got to be. I mean, almost every time you're on, there's a pending plant sale, so there has to be one coming, right?
Yeah, we actually are. Well, we're there. This weekend is actually the plant sale, so it's coming up.
Okay.
And we've been really busy. Things are looking really great. We're excited about it. And this Saturday and Sunday from 10 o'clock to 4 p.m., and we have trees, shrubs, perennials. All kinds of small flowering plants. We have a fantastic book sale as well. It's used books, a lot of gardening books, but all kinds of different topics. And one of the best bake sales around as well.
So the Landis Arboretum is just spectacular.
It's gorgeous right now. It's really looking good. The trails are in perfect shape. The lawn's probably about as dialed in as it's been.
Yeah.
The lack of rain for the past month really let us catch up on a lot of groundwork.
Yeah.
And things look really good, and we're really ready for the sale. So stop out this weekend, landisarboretum.org, for more details on that.
If Bob Graves drives his truck over, will you let him ride on the lawn?
He gets VIP access over
there. Oh, really?
I don't have
a handicap permit yet.
By the way,
we let him drive on our lawns.
There is a large, there's a plant the size of a toddler in here. What's the deal, Delilah?
So that is a handsome, hardy hibiscus that's also very happy, by the way.
So that's 4 H's.
Yes.
Huh, 4 H.
Yes.
Oh, beautiful.
And it's just one of my favorite perennials. They bloom in August and September. We traditionally have grown four different colors of them. Usually the white is the first one, and those are all done. And they go to a light pink and then a darker pink and this magenta color.
It's gorgeous.
And they're a really easy to care for plant that gives you some light color in the late summer and early fall. And I just thought that your gardener might want to have one.
Oh, my gardener?
Yes.
Well, I'm thinking about firing her. No, I'm not.
There's some confusion, too, with hibiscus, because when somebody comes into us in the store and asks for hibiscus, it could be this, a perennial.
Yeah.
It could be the tropical hibiscus.
Right.
Or it could be Rosa Sharon, which is a hibiscus.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right. It's
so
in the same genus.
You have to find out what people are really looking for.
And this hardy variety is great because it not only has these spectacular blooms, but are actually long-lived. They'll stay on the plant for a while.
Those flowers are enormous.
Yep.
I mean, this looks like nature's satellite dish.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah.
A lot of flower power there.
This amazing.
This, I think, is straight species, the selection. You know, that these are mostly native to North America, perennial hibiscus. And you'll see them on occasion, often in wet areas, often pink, but also sometimes this reddish color.
Gorgeous.
That red one is awesome.
Gorgeous.
We were saying going into the show, too, that if you plant one of these in the spring, it's not going to come up right away. You're going to think it's dead.
Really?
It's a slow starter.
Oh, very slow starter.
Wait until into May.
Needs warmer soil temperatures.
Yep.
We actually leave the stalk and make sure it doesn't get cut down. So,
So these are perennials.
Yes,
they are
perennials.
Fantiddly-tastic.
Yep.
That's great.
Yep.
My garden will be so happy.
It likes mostly sun.
Okay.
You know, a little bit of parts shade is okay, but
it likes damp too. I mean,
it'll tolerate all kinds of soil. It'll tolerate dry too.
Yeah. Ours is planted in some really dry stuff right up against our house foundation.
And the one that we have is similar. It's in really dry soil, and it's right up against a retaining wall. It's not getting much moisture, but it's
so cool.
It's been flowering for a long period of time. So great shit.
I like it. Okay, so let's do a couple of emails here, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. The phones are loading up. There's still two or three open lines. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's gardening today with Fred, Greg, Dale Isle, and Bob. And Ann in Bonsville writes, and I'll show you the picture here. You know, there's kind of an admonition. If you're sending in pictures, try not to, because nobody on the radio side can see them. But this one needs a picture. Anne writes in, including this pic of assumed natural foreign objects I noticed under a porch handrail a few days ago. Thinking there's some kind of insect encasement, I'd like to know if it's a good bug to leave alone or a bad one to get rid of post-haste. Would be grateful for any input you gurus might be able to provide. Maybe you've seen it out in the field, literally. Happy Thursday to everybody, and that's from Ann in Bonsville. I'm going to guess it's some kind of a spider here. No? It's round. It looks like paper mache, and we can't tell the scale on this by the picture.
Yeah, we might want some color, and if they wanted to email that.
You've never seen this?
It's hard to tell what it is. There's not a lot of terrible things out there, but there are a couple.
It looks to me like when you're making drop biscuits and you have balls of dough.
Almost looks like mud, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm almost...
A mud wasp?
I'm actually thinking, it looks a little bit different than what I would normally say was a mud dauber.
It's a little more regular.
It's a little more round, and it doesn't...
Could be, though.
I'm thinking it's probably some kind of a nest or egg casing.
Okay.
But it might be the mud dauber.
Yeah, this little kind of slightly depressed cone on the outside is interesting to me. I'm thinking some type of mud dauber or it might be a spider.
Yeah. Anne suggests that I do an entomology show, which I have not done in years. So
maybe
in 2025, I'm starting to think about that.
If they wanted to send the color photo to info@wardsnursery.com.
Okay, I'll forward that to you as we get rolling here. This email from Raymond: the tree in front of our house died after a long life, and we'd love to replace it with something that flowers and is appropriate for a typical road strip between sidewalk and street. What do you think? The Sergeant Cherry, Crab Apple, and this is from Raymond.
I would take something that's fairly narrow. There are some narrow
crab
apples.
There are some narrow crab apples. Yeah, the Adirondack. There's one called Adirondack.
Yeah, we used to recommend calorie pears, but it's kind of like I don't recommend calorie pears anymore for a whole lot of reasons.
Yeah, for a whole lot of reasons.
You know, but I would go with a pyramidal.
If you wanted that upright, that Adirondack, Malus Adirondack, it's a resistant variety crab apple as well. Resistant meaning crab apples in general are what we call plants that are in the rose family. And plants that are in the rose family tend to get a fair amount of diseases and insect problems. That being said, nowadays we recommend planting resistant varieties, and Adirondack is a resistant one. It's not a new one. It's been around for a while, but we've got them at the Arboretum.
You can Google them and look for resistant columnar crabapple, and you'd find
it. And that one is a good one. It's a white flowering one.
There's a columnar cherry called Sargenti.
That's possible, too.
Sargent's cherry, but the columnar version.
Okay. One more email, then we'll take a break, and then we will hit the phones. It's Gardening Today, 800-348-2551. Richard writes, I have a beautiful rose of Sharon that I'd like to have moved because it drops its dead flowers out of my deck. Its base is 18 inches from the deck, stands around 9 feet tall and 9 feet wide. Is it possible to relocate it? And if so, the best time. It says soothe, but that's
a big one.
Yeah, so that's a big one.
The best time would, if they could wait, would be spring. Yep. They're not. It's not something that's usually recommended in fall in the Northeast. You could do it if you have to, and get as much root ball as you can.
That's the hard part with that, is getting something that you can move, because the root ball's going to be so heavy.
Yeah, if it's 18 inches from the house, you want all of that 18 inches, and then you want 18 inches all in every other direction.
Uh-huh.
So that's a lot of soil. You may want to ask for some professional help there. But moving it in April or 1st of May would be the best time.
So and leave it be for the fall and winter.
Ideally, that would be.
Yeah, okay. I would say the same. And, ultimately, if you are enlisting the help of a professional that's moved big trees, that's not – I mean, we can move way bigger trees. People have moved oak trees with trunks that big.
Yeah.
Being that close to the house might be a problem, because you can't get a tree spade in there.
You can't get a tree spade in there.
Which would be the best way to do it.
Which would be one of the better ways. Yeah, so they're going to have to probably do a combination of backhoe hand dig.
Yeah, a little excavator and hand. Yep. And I think they could move it pretty well.
But that root system is usually generally pretty fibrous, too, so they're not
taproot.
They're not big tap, from my experience, not big taproot plants. So probably have pretty good luck.
It's Gardening Today with Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs. We have to take a brief break, and then the phones, which are now loaded, we will go to them. 800-348-2551. When you hear somebody hang up, that's the time. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, The Crusaders, So Far Away is the music there. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gardening Today with Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch, where it is melon season, and we will be tasting some in a little bit. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum, and Bob Graves from Fadigan's Nursery. And now to the phones we go. Michael in New Marlboro has been waiting for 18 minutes. It's your turn. Go.
Hello?
Hello, you're on.
Oh, great. I live on a road that has access to a lake, and I have a very narrow strip of land. And this last year, I put in a riprap swale, which is a lot of stones on one side of the strip of land and grass on the other. And the reason was that the heavy rains was eroding all of the soil and revealing the roots of trees that made it very difficult to access the waterfront. I wanted to know what kind of grass would be recommended on both sides of this piece of land. There are lots of tall trees, so it's quite dark. And I wanted to know what kind of grass would be recommended to put in there and when.
Yeah. It's, grass like sun, period. You would go with something that's heavy in fescue.
Yes,
maybe try a conservation mix. something with some ryegrass that would come up. I'd get a mix that had a bunch of different things in it, and that way sometimes whatever is most happy in those conditions will prevail.
Yeah.
Rather than putting one thing in.
Yeah, and get the mixes that they'll usually, when you buy the mixes, they'll say like sunshade or shade tolerant or happy in the shade, which, you know, really there's no grass that's really super happy in the shade.
Even the shade tolerant ones are going to say would like 3 to 4 hours.
They do.
Really?
Yeah, but get one of those mixes, as Bob said, that is definitely that says something like shade tolerant on the actual label.
Right.
And you are able to mow this area? You can run the mower right over it?
The gardener has done it in the past.
Yeah.
But as they eroded it, it became impossible. All the roots were exposed, and it was difficult to even walk on it. So
there was grass growing there before, and it just...
Yes, there was.
Yeah.
So that's a good indication.
Something will germinate there, for sure. A dense shade mix would be ideal.
The trick with that is when you put grass seed down, if you don't water it, it doesn't grow.
Right.
Exactly.
So fall's a great time because it tends to be a little moister and a little cooler. So I'd be getting prepared to do it pretty soon.
Yep. And you want to do it before.
Pretty soon.
Cooler and moist is great. But if it gets too cool, then the seed will germinate. It'll sit there. So you want to do it kind of like, it's,
September,
as Bob
is
said, kind of
month.
Getting close to that time now.
Next month.
All right. Yep. Michael, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Steve in Westfield. Steve, you're on.
Yeah. Hi. I've got some hydrangeas, and they did really good this year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Well,
go ahead.
I don't know. Normally they die back. Normally they die back all the way to the ground, and I get two or three flowers.
Correct.
This year we didn't have a winter.
Yeah, that's right.
So is there anything I can do? Like, I've tried covering them in burlap. I've tried covering them with like a big plastic bag that you get that color that comes on the pallet of wood pellets.
Yeah.
And with no luck keeping them from freezing.
Don't put plastic on them ever.
Really?
That just does not work well at all.
Yep.
It'll heat up and hurt them.
Yep.
So burlap's okay. The main thing to do is pray for a mild winter.
Yeah, mild winter, but you can try, and this is a lot of work, to insulate the individual stems with soil or compost that is soil consistency so that you're actually bringing a wheelbarrow over to the plant full of some compost or topsoil and gently pouring it all over the plant. So that you've buried it. There's now a mound where the plant was, and some of the stems are sticking out because, as you probably have listened, don't prune it back. And whatever you've buried has a much better chance of surviving the winter. You don't have to do this until December, and it's probably recommended not to do it until the ground gets cold.
Right.
But that is the only other trick.
You're going to need to remove it in the spring.
There's two of them, and they're full grown. They're like 4 or 5 feet in diameter.
So you're covering maybe 15, 18 inches of the bottom.
Yep, it's sort of like what we call winter mulching.
They're brittle, you know, so you'll break them if you try to, like, fold them down, right?
Yeah, you're not going to be able to fold them.
Let everything that's taller than the 15 or 18 inches stick out of the pile of soil.
Okay.
Yep, and then the burlap would still be a recommendation that we'd say, you know, you could still do the burlap screen around them. But this year was just an unbelievable year for so many people's hydrangeas because of that mild winter. And so many of them, whether they die back to the ground or in a lot of cases the blue and pink ones, you know, people haven't seen flowers on them like this. I don't know.
Ever.
I mean,
it wasn't just me. It was everywhere.
It was
pride of mine. And I went to my brother's house in Needham, and everybody in the neighborhood had them that were this is good, you know, they were banging.
But I wouldn't count on winters being, you know, although, you know, they might be mild. Again, it only takes a couple of, you know, a night or two of cold.
It's La Nina now,
to do it.
So who knows?
Who knows? But, you know, that winter mulching.
Now covering them with plastic won't work.
That's bad. Don't do that.
Like, if I took fiberglass insulation and covered each one of the buds and with a rubber band, I mean,
you're not going to do that.
Holy mackerel. that's crazy talk.
It's
too much
crap.
You could build a plywood box.
You could.
You could around it.
Over the entire thing or each individual plant. And when it gets cold, then throw that insulation or some straw in there. You want to wait till it's cold so you don't make it a home for the voles. and just fill that thing up and close it up on the top as well.
Yeah, I know people that have done that with fig trees and got them to overwinter. So sometimes it becomes almost more of an engineering problem than it does an actual horticultural question.
Okay. Steve, thanks a lot for the call. It's Gardening Today, 800-348-2551. Let's head out to New Hartford, and it's Martha's turn. Hello, Martha.
Hi. Hold on just a second. Let me pull over. Okay.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
So, I got a small poinsettia last Christmas time, and I've managed to keep it alive. And actually, it has thrived and gotten quite bushy, maybe about the size of a volleyball. But it's very green. It's got lots and lots of leaves. So I wonder if there's something I can do to make it go red.
Yep. It's going to be shorter days. That's what we need.
You've got to have absolutely natural day length. Yep. When the sun goes down, it's in the dark. When the sun comes up, it's in the light. And if you turn a light on in that room once, you're going to ruin it.
Wow.
Yep. It needs to get to that shorter day cycle. So longer nights, it'll probably go into that mode just naturally in your house, unless you have a lot of extra lights on, like Bob said.
We had them in the greenhouse one time. We had trouble with the boiler, and we were going in there at night and turning the light on, and everything that was underneath the lights didn't flower.
You are kidding me.
Well, even if you have a greenhouse and there's big street lights around you, your poinsettias won't bloom.
Absolutely. Back in college, we had a whole house full of poinsettias, and we couldn't understand exactly why none of them were really changing. And it dawned later, we figured it out. It was one of the extra street lights that was kicking
amazing.
On after everybody was gone.
It gets dark when it gets light, they're light. But you can't put them somewhere where they're dark all the time. Yes. Right. You need the light during the day.
If you have a room that you don't use in the evening and you can close the door and there's not a street light outside the window, that would be the place to put it. And it needs that for about, I think, 60 days or so. So starting sometime in September in order to get it to bloom for the holiday season. Otherwise, it will bloom later, a little bit later.
Yep.
All right. Hey, Martha, you want to follow up here very quickly or can we dispatch
it? Yeah, I just want to know how much light does it need? So like if I put it in the closet every night, I take it out in the daytime. How much light?
That's a high light plant. You know, in the South, they're shrubs that grow outside in full sun. So in a greenhouse, we don't have any shading on the greenhouse when we're growing poinsettias. They need to be in a lot of light.
In terms of the day length, 8 hours is plenty. It could be a little shorter, and it shouldn't be longer than 10 hours.
Right. So your nights are significantly longer than your days.
Really,
and that's what's going to initiate that flower. It's going to initiate it. And then as it continues to get shorter days and longer nights, it just continues to flower more and more.
But once you see it initiated, once it's red or showing some color, you can put it anywhere you want.
Yep.
All right, Martha, thank you so much for the call. It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, Dale Isla Riggs, and Bob Graves. And now to Falls Village, it's Heather's turn. Hello, Heather.
Hello.
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 Hello?
Hi. You're on.
We're here.
Hi.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes. Yes, we can.
Okay. Yeah.
Zach, the engineer, can't take it when we do this. Sorry. we got you just fine. Go ahead.
Okay. We have a lot of people in my neighborhood have these very old lilacs that they've had for years, and suddenly this summer there's some virus. I was told it was a virus, and all the leaves have crumpled up and dropped, and mine is practically nude, and I'm wondering if it's going to come back next year.
So it's not a virus.
Yeah, it's not a virus. It's actually fungal.
Right.
And it's coming back next year 100%. Yep. It's there was sort of a perfect storm for a lot of these foliar diseases this year with high humidity for a long period of time, and then quite a considerable amount of rain, except for recently. And what that does is it basically makes fungi happy. That's what they like. Mm-hmm. And that's great for, you know, mushrooms in the woods and foragers out there, but it's not great for the diseases that attack plants.
And right now they look dead, but
they look
not
bad.
If you look at them, you're going to see nice green buds at the end of the twigs.
Yep, and if you scratch any of the little branches, you'll see they're bright green. Yep. And next year it'll come back perfect, and you may not get this again, but you might, depending on the conditions.
Yep. Okay.
But don't do anything, and don't panic. They'll definitely come back. You'll be happy.
Heather, thanks a lot for the call. We go to Gallupville. Jackie, you're on.
Hi. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
I have a lemon tree that's in a container on my deck. and I put it out every summer for the required, you know, sun. And right now it has lots of blossoms and it has fruit, very little tiny lemons. Should I be knocking off some of the blossoms so that the fruit that's there will grow?
It's not usually something that has to happen with citrus. They some of the flowers will fall off naturally. Some of the fruit will fall off naturally. I think if it's happy, you're keeping it well hydrated, it otherwise looks good, I wouldn't worry too much about that.
Sometimes
okay, you don't step in and anything.
They'll
then
thin themselves.
Yeah, they generally will thin themselves.
You know, if it feels like, gee, I've got more demand on my root system than I can handle, it'll drop some of those flowers.
Yeah, a lot of plants do that. I mean,
and also when you're going to have to bring this back in, right? Mm. And that
at that time
it will also sort of self.
It's going to go downhill when you bring it in.
Self-clean,
it
things will drop because that light level will change, and that usually is a minor stress that causes.
One of the things to understand with those plants that you put outside and bring back in is that a leaf is really most positively functional when it's in the light that it was grown in. So when a leaf is taken into a different light level, the structure of that leaf has to change.
I've never heard that before.
The chloroplasts spread out. And the leaf becomes thinner and more green, and it'll often have to completely change its physical structure in lower light so that the chloroplasts that are there are more able to utilize.
Is it capable of doing that?
Oh, yeah. Like all the stuff you get out of Florida, eventually it's going to change when it gets into lower light.
It's all going to be on the quiz at the end of this show for you, Ray.
Yeah, so, I really haven't been taking notes. I feel pretty bad about it. You want to follow up, Jackie?
It'll be multiple choice.
So I just don't do anything. I just let it do whatever it does.
Leave it alone.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for the call to Winchendon, Mass. And Ginny, you're on.
Hi. I have a Rose of Sharon that was about 4 foot tall, and it doubled this year with all the rain. It has wonderful blossoms that are pink with burgundy, and they bolted and blossomed early, but it's gotten so big. Can I prune that back now?
I would recommend you not prune it now. It's actually going to be a late, I guess you'd call it an early spring, late winter type of pruning. You want to get it before it actively grows. So if at this point in the game, I'd let it go to bed, and then I'd look at pruning that before the foliage starts to grow this coming spring, late winter or early spring. Kind of around the time. It'd be like around the time that a lot of the apple growers, they prune orchards sort of end of winter, early spring. That's similar time, maybe a little bit later for Rose of Sharon.
Probably March. General.
Something like that.
Usually around March around here, the orchards. Yeah. Okay, fantastic.
Yep.
Thank you so much. Love your show.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
And when you prune it, if you're still listening, just no more. We always say no more than 30% off total volume at one session. So if you're trying to reduce it to half, you might be better off taking it back by a third and then seeing how it goes. And then next year, following year, take it back by another third or so, and then you'll have it.
I call it remedial pruning.
All right.
Do a little bit, and then you do a little bit more the next year.
Yep, just so you don't stress the plant.
All right, let's go to take one more call. We'll go to Walden, and then we'll take a break, and then we have to try some watermelon. And then we'll go back to the phones. Right now, to Nancy in Walden. You're on.
Hi.
I
got an Osage orange from the, I don't know if it's bush or tree, from my husband's family farm before they sold it and tore it down the Osage orange plant. And I soaked it, and I got seeds, and I planted them, and one grew.
Great.
And I've had it. It's been growing for like 4 years, I think. And do I need another plant to get the oranges? Or will one plant produce the Osage orange?
Great question. I think you only need one, but we're going to try to figure that out.
I also think you only need one. And it is a tree, not a shrub. And not only is it a tree, it's a tree that can get quite large given time. You wouldn't believe how big they can get.
And the tree is healthy now? The tree itself?
It's a foot and a half tall now.
Okay.
And it is in a pot, and I bring it inside in the winter because I'm afraid of putting it outside that the deer are going to eat it, and then I won't have any Osage orange.
So long term, I would urge you to consider planting it in the yard and maintain it as a single trunk plant. They are They are hardy. We have them at Landis Arboretum growing as trees.
These are edible oranges?
Not really. They call them hedge apples.
Okay.
You know, I always consider that more of a wildlife food. But is it edible? I'd have to look that one up. Probably. Sure. But I don't think it's – You hear about people like, oh, pawpaws and, oh, persimmon. But you never hear, oh, we got hedge apples.
Okay.
Okay,
so Dale Isla has an update for you,
Nancy. Yes, Osage orange trees are dioecious, which means individual flowers are either male or female, but only one sex is found on any one plant.
Okay, you would need two.
So you will need two, and you'll need to know which one it is. To get the other one.
Now, I have been able to sex a plant by looking at the flower under a microscope.
Look, Bob, this is a family show.
You can tell. But it doesn't flower. You can't tell.
So if you know of another farm with several plants on it, trees on it, you could go out there now and assume that the ones that have no fruit whatsoever should be male.
Yeah.
And that you picked that yours might be a female. That said, yours grew from seed, so it could be a male.
It could be either one.
So maybe you need three just in case.
Yeah, I mean, the one who's lying on the couch is obviously the male. So we're going to take a break here. 800-348-2551 is our number. Oh, yeah, it's gardening. It's almost watermelon time. We'll be back. Out the window, there's Count Basie, 800-348-2551. That's the number. And before we taste the watermelon, since we're talking about windows in our bumper music, Janet writes, very simple question. Can lemongrass and elephant ears winter inside in a very super sunny location?
Well,
yes.
The first answer, though, is there is no really sunny location in the wintertime in this part of the world. It's cloudy 80% of the time.
Now, they can do it. They can do
they can do it.
They're both right. You guys are both right.
So lemongrass, a nice sunny window, and then elephant ears, it doesn't have to be as sunny. They're very shade tolerant. Elephant ears, it's not a bad idea if you're going to keep them going, to set them in a little water tray.
Okay.
That's helpful. They like that moisture. At the same time, you can kind of, if it's like the green bulbous one, you can actually let it go dormant. But if it's, you know, one of the typical like calocasias doesn't really form a bulb, it's one of the more colorful, dark leafed ones, you can keep that going.
Okay. Had a chance while you gave that nice answer. I had a chance to try the watermelon in Dale Isla Riggs. You've done it again. What do we got there?
So this is a variety called Sirius. We actually grow four different varieties of seedless watermelons so that we have them from about 5 inches in diameter to about 12 inches in diameter.
Okay.
And it makes September just such a wonderful month. I love September anyways, but watermelon especially is just
icing on the cake. I can see the glow that comes on your face when we talk about melons. You'll love melons.
That's right.
Is it past cantaloupe time? Are they done?
For some people it is. We actually were harvesting some just before I came out. We still do a late planting so that we have them as far into the fall as possible.
Yeah, that's
Now, do you have these in great profusion over at the Berry Patch?
So the Berry Patch, all the high school students and college students have gone back to work. So the Berry Patch is only open a few hours on Fridays, but we have them at our booth at the Troy Market on Saturdays.
Is it pick your own if people go to the Berry Patch on Friday afternoon?
Not if I have anything to say about it.
All right. I like that very much. We call that inventory control, I suppose. All right. Let's see here. A couple more emails, and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from Karen, whose subject heading seems like a weird year for dahlias. My dahlias have plenty of buds on them, but they're taking forever to bloom. Foliage seems fine. Most buds look healthy, but they are opening one at a time, then waiting a week, maybe another bud opens. Most years, I have several blooms at once. Any ideas why they're so pokey this year? And that's from Karen.
I've heard that a little bit, too, from, I think it's the heat.
I was going to say, I suspect it's the hot summer that they did, just like tomatoes drop their blossoms during the heat of the summer, the dahlias probably did not initiate their flower buds all at one time. And so they initiated them slowly over time. So
you're also seeing that a little bit with the fall mums, the so-called hardy mums, which aren't really hardy. They are heat delayed. So we're getting stuff in now that's really, really tight bud, where normally would be showing color because it was so
hot. So it's just a little delayed.
They kind of stop.
The good news on the dahlias, though, is that it's cooling off September and even October if we don't get serious frost.
That's true. Yeah, so you can definitely have a good show.
So,
all right, back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Try to get a few more emails in as the program wraps up here in the last 15, 20 minutes. We'll go out to Malta. Sue, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Okay, great. I had an oak leaf hydrangea that was getting leggy and not blooming. And a couple years ago, somebody suggested I cut it way down to the ground. And what happened was it came back very oddly, and it made a lot of volunteer babies, which was not exactly what I wanted. Now I have another kind of panicle hydrangea that's probably been planted for 10, 12 years, and it's all bare wood kind of in the middle and then lots of blossoms and stuff. It looks fine on the outside.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if I can cut that way back or whether the same thing will happen, that I'll get just an odd-looking bush and lots of babies around the outside.
They're two different things altogether. Yeah. So I have panicle hydrangeas, big ones that have done the same thing, and what's happened is the outer growth has gotten so heavy that it's shading the inner growth. The inner growth falls off.
So,
but you can certainly whack that way back.
It's not a bad idea to do it, to do some pruning every year. And again, we're usually late winter, spring is when we would recommend to do that. If it's really, if they're as big as your, as thick as your finger, they're easy to cut back. Any of those stems could be cut in half or even farther. But if they're big, if they're broom handle size and there's a lot of them and you're cutting that far back in, it will still work. But you're going to have this really scary bare plant well into June, and then lots of shoots will come off of it. And it won't set up really any kind of
it's not like the
shoots
leaf.
from the ground.
Yeah, it doesn't tend to sucker those
so,
as much.
So yes, you can. You know, there is that general rule that 25-30% with panicle hydrangeas, you could probably go closer to 40% and they still don't mind that. But don't cut it to the ground. Mm-hmm. We want to have at least half of the plant still existing, and it will fill out pretty well. Some additional nutrients wouldn't hurt in the spring as well. It's some fertilizer around that plant so that it is able to push pretty strong.
Okay, Sue.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. To Claverick we go. It's Elizabeth. Hello, Elizabeth. You're on. Oh, can you turn the radio down there, friend?
Yes. This is Elizabeth from Claverick.
Okay, you're on.
Thank you. I have two quince trees that are about 4 years old, and this is the first year that they've really bloomed a lot. I mean, fruited a lot. But I noticed that there was a brown area, not spots, but just spreading all over the skin. When I cut them up, there was it seemed to be rot at the core, but the fruit inside that was affected was dark, but it wasn't rotten. I'm wondering what this is, if it's a fungus, and whether I should pick them all earlier. They're not quite, well, ripe. It's hard to tell with a quince because they're so hard. But just wondering how to avoid this.
All right. Anybody want to jump in on that?
Yeah, it's most likely one of the fungal diseases. As we were mentioning earlier, it's been quite a year for fungal diseases. I have some friends that I get quince from every year, and every year some of the fruit have that. So it seems to be pretty natural for that to happen with the quince. Again, we had a wet summer conducive to a lot of fungal disease. I wouldn't really worry about it for the future. In a dry year, you're probably not going to have a lot of that. Quince are pretty productive on their own, so I wouldn't worry about trying to control it per se.
Okay.
My experience.
They did have a. Yes, go ahead.
I was just going to say my experience with quince as a kid was we used to throw them at each other.
Ah,
and they're really hard, yes, and they really hurt.
They are hard. Do they ripen after they're picked? If I, you know, I'm tempted to pick them all now before this brown spreads throughout all of each fruit.
They will turn more yellow and get more aromatic. So yeah, you could call that ripening. They're really nice mixed in with apple crisp.
Wow.
They make a really nice, kind of spiky flavor to the apple crisp.
There you go. Jelly makes
okay,
a great
can,
jelly.
Can we change to the food show for just a second?
Sure.
How do we prepare the quince?
You should always eat them cooked. So,
right, so peeling them? No.
We don't bother.
No peeling.
Just cook them.
Nope.
Just slap them in the old crisp.
Yep. Cook them like you would an apple?
Just cut them up like an apple or a pear and mix them in with your apples.
Okay.
There you go.
Well, Elizabeth, thanks a lot for the call. What's a quince? What does it look like?
It's a member of the apple and pear family, so it kind of looks in between an apple and a pear.
Yeah, okay.
And they smell totally wonderful when they're really ripe. Yeah.
So what would possess some child, some perhaps juvenile delinquent, to throw these delicious aromatic fruits at brother and sister and everything?
My next door neighbors, there were four boys.
Ah, I see.
And it was war.
So everything was a weapon, basically.
everything was a weapon.
I understand.
Beautiful smell of piece of fruit,
in our yard.
Rock.
In our yard, it was horse chestnuts.
Oh, that's worse.
You know, speaking of things I don't know about, which is it's a very long list, when we go to southern Maine, right off the beach, there are these small fruit bushes that are just off the beach.
Beach plum.
Beach plum.
What are they, and are they edible?
Yeah, yes. Very edible.
It's a plum. It's related to the plum trees.
There's just tons of them.
Yep. Beach plum.
And nobody takes them, so I figured they must be poisonous.
Some people take them.
You're kidding me.
They make jam out of them.
Yep. Mm. And wildlife are definitely consuming them.
Yeah. Okay.
They don't mind the sandy, salty, dry area.
They grow really. They're prolific and tough plant actually.
They'll grow here. Yeah. I mean, you know, they want it well drained, of course, but they'll grow here.
All right. Let's go to East Brookfield. It's Addie's turn. Hello there, Addie.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
Can a rose of Sharon be trimmed from the top, so it won't grow into a tree, but stay about 5 or 6 feet?
Yep. Yes.
Yep, you could do that, no problem. You'd have to prune it probably a little bit every year.
Yeah, if you don't do it every year, it's going to get away from
you. Yep, it'll get away from you. But and we talked about this a little earlier in the show. The timing for the pruning would be sort of like around March. You want to get it before the foliage actively grows. So end of the winter, early spring. Before they grow, kind of go in there. You'll see bare sticks, you know, branches, and prune back. Depending on how big is it now?
Oh, it's about 6 feet now.
About 6 feet?
That'd be all right.
So you could definitely cut it back to 5 without any question. And then if you wanted you could even cut it back to like 4.5. Yeah. And then you'd have, allow for some of the season's growth because it'll push out another foot or two. So if you wanted to cut it back to like, if it's 6 now, you could probably cut it back to about 4. And then that would allow it to grow out to about 5 for you. And then every year, you'll probably have to do a little bit of that to keep it there, but it won't be hard to do that because
one of the nice things about pruning in March for a lot of things is you can see what you're doing.
Exactly.
There's no leaves on the plant.
Yeah.
It's really, you can see the bones of the plant, as I say. Yep.
All right, Addie.
Yeah, that's what I was, thank you, but that's just what I was looking at it right now because it's blooming good. Yep. And it's quite wide. It's not awfully wide, but it's just right now. But I would like it, yes, I think I'd take your advice and do it down to about 4 feet.
There you go. Yep, and then let it, give yourself a little room for regrowth. And you can also make it a little narrower if it does start to get, too wide for you. It's kind of the same type of concept.
And you could do a little late spring pruning if you still feel like it's too big. So 1st of June, middle of June, you could do some light pruning, and that would still allow it some time to flower.
Okay, Addie, thanks a lot for the call. This email from Susie, who is miraculously both in Saratoga Springs and in Aiken, South Carolina. Now, I'm not sure how she pulls that off. Susie writes, our neighborhood in Saratoga had an infestation of rabbits this year. They destroyed all of our Asiatic lilies, etc. Will the lilies come back? And how can we protect the shoots when they're coming up should the rabbits return?
Well, you know, there's a couple of options. One is to put some sort of fencing around them so they can't get at them.
Yeah.
Yep.
You can also spray repellents. But the problem with repellents is they put out new growth so often, you got to spray it all the time, and you're not getting the new growth.
Yep.
I mean, they just destroyed my lilies.
The rabbits? So many rabbits in my backyard.
It was a huge year for...
I think a mild winter again.
And I think the mild winter definitely...
I ordered a bobcat.
That'll do it.
Yeah, that'll take care of it.
Chipmunks, you know, same thing. Tons of chipmunks, tons of voles.
A lot of more. Somebody at Cornell ought to do a study on little furry creatures because there's just a whole lot more of them.
Yeah, man.
We've got to assume there's the
populations. And there's more predators. I mean, there's more foxes.
You are so right. I saw a fox the other morning out in our back hill, and I haven't seen one. I saw a mangy one a couple of years ago that looked like it was about to die.
Yeah.
This one looked darned healthy.
There's a lot of predators out there.
Eagles. We've offered coyotes free Landis T-shirts if they control rabbits in the gardens. So we've only had a few takers.
Really? Every night my dog goes nuts because she hears the coyotes.
There's a lot of them.
They're just howling.
Yep, but...
Okay, I haven't seen those yet in my neighborhood, but they're coming.
They're coming.
I know they are.
They're there. They're probably already there.
Really?
You're not going to see them during the day.
They don't make any noise.
No, they're a nighttime predator. And
they start howling at night because they want to see where everybody is.
Yep.
Oh, really? You know what I want to do, Fred? You've probably not done this, but I want to get one of those trail cams.
Oh, that might work.
And put it on. How many do you have now? Like 37 trail cams?
We've got a collection of them.
Yeah.
It would be neat to see. But coyotes are a very adaptable animal. So if wolves, you think, is like the strongest predator, but it's not hard to take out a wolf because it needs a lot of land.
Yeah.
Whereas a coyote, it can live in the cities, and it does.
And they do. Yeah.
Very interesting.
As well as the country.
Let's go to Rock Hill. Margaret. Oh, no, it's Neil. Margaret, hang in there. Neil, make it quick so we can get Margaret in there, too.
You betcha. Thanks, guys. Quick question, probably. Butternut tree. I have a beautiful open-grown recruit. It's about 15 years old now, 6-inch DBH. Lower branches are growing into the driveway. I need to prune it, but I don't want to introduce the blight. What's the best time of year to try and do that?
With butternut, you can do a summer prune. Summer prune's fine. You could also do a dormant prune, but the main thing would be that if you're pruning it, a couple of things. You want to make sure you sterilize the pruners. The blight is either going to find it or it's not. So it's not so much like oak wilt as pruning cut. It's going to introduce blight. But I would sterilize your pruners just to be safe.
And what do you use? You use Clorox and water, or you use alcohol?
I use just rubbing alcohol.
Alcohol, because Clorox and water vaporizes really quick.
Oh, interesting.
It doesn't last long.
No, I don't like it because I don't like the Clorox water because it leaves the tools potentially a little moisture.
Yeah.
Alcohol is just a better way to go.
I agree.
So sterilize it, but you want to try to maintain a single liter with that. It's going to want to spread out.
Okay.
So maintain a single liter, and then some of those side branches are going to want to take over the top. You're going to just want to reduce those a little bit so that the top becomes a little more dominant. Butternuts want to spread out.
All right. Now we have four. I hit the wrong button. Margaret was ahead of our last caller. Okay. Margaret, I'm so sorry. You got about 15 seconds to pose the question.
All right. So the lilac, if you trim it in the late winter, will that help keep that fungi coming back? Is this the second year I've had it?
Not related to the fungus at all.
And wet the weather is.
It's all about what the weather is for that time of year. But the pruning for lilac is right after they bloom. And again, not going to affect whether or not fungus gets on there. That's just climactic conditions.
And to control...
So there's nothing you can do about that fungus.
You can control it aesthetically, because that's what we're saying, that it's only aesthetic. It's not hurting the plant itself, just making the leaves not look ugly. And so you could try fungicides before the blight starts. So June applications, every 10 days or so would help.
Okay, Margaret, we got to leave it there. Thank you very much for the call. Glad we squeezed you in there. Very quickly, Bob Graves, how do we find Fatigan's?
Fatigan's, we're on Troy Schenectady Road, 2.5 miles west of the Northway, just past the airport road.
You sound like a radio guy.
You tell me that every night.
Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery.
Yeah. What's the question?
Where are you and why?
Ward's Nursery, 600 South Main Street, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, wardsnursery.com.
Dale Isla Riggs, The Berry Patch.
TheBerryPatch.net, 15589 State Route 22.
And you will not pick your own. Okay, fair enough. Fred Breglia, Landis Arboretum.
It's at 174 Lape Road in town of Esperance, and our website's info, or I should say landisarboretum.org.
All right, folks, we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Support comes from the Eddy Senior Living Communities, providing opportunities for seniors to make new friends, participate in daily activities, and partake in custom menus. Featuring fresh, locally sourced ingredients, Eddy, E-D-D-Y, seniorliving.com. Once again, thanks to Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs for being here. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. 2 weeks from today, we'll do it again. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, Nathan Scheid screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Food Friday. We'll talk about peak harvest with Chef Rick Orlando. See you at 2:00.